This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 135, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 120 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. This week, I've put together a compilation episode that features different guests' alien abduction experiences. This is a part of the UFO phenomenon that I find particularly interesting, and each guest I am presenting here will recount a unique aspect of the experience. So I'm going to start with Mike Cleland. Mike Cleland's 2015 book, The Messengers, was met with high praise. In it, he explores the mysterious connection between owls, synchronicities, and UFO abduction. It was his first-hand experiences with these elusive events that have been the foundation for his research. Well, can we talk about the other side of owls within the UFO sort of experiences, these four-foot owls, these screen memories?
Yes, the screen memory aspect of it is something that I have to address, right? And then there's other part half where I feel very strongly the owls I saw with Christian in the mountains, those were real owls. They were 11 inches tall. They looked like owls. We were right next to them. They were flying around us. They were doing things that an owl would do. The context was odd, right? But that they would seem so attracted to us, but they were certainly real owls. I don't doubt that. But what is very common, let me tell a story. So I went to a UFO conference very early on in all this. This would have been about 2008 or so. And I was very stressed. And they have what's called a UFO support group, right? So people who've had UFO contact experiences sit around in a circle. You can visualize it like a Alcoholics Anonymous meeting where people share their stories. A very important setting because people realize I am not alone. You look around the circle, everyone's very normal, right? It's a cross section of the population. It's very normal in those events. And then there's one guy off on the side of the circle, he was kind of backed off into the corner a little bit. He kind of raised his hand timidly at the end of the meeting and he said, "Hey, I just got to ask, has anyone here had any unusual experiences with owls?" And this guy literally almost fell out of his chair when I'm going to say almost everyone in the room raised their hand, including me. And then he told a story. He said, "I was driving down the road at night and there was this 4-foot tall owl on the side of the road. It didn't make any sense. So I slowed down. I rolled my window down. I looked at this owl out my window. I was alone out the driver's side window. And I got a really bad feeling. I drove off." And then later on, he's a photographer. And he went to go take some pictures of owls. There was a nest in a tree. He's taking pictures. He's looking through the telephoto lens and he's looking at these little teeny owls, these baby owls in a nest and this mother owl. And he says, "I don't think that was an owl I saw that night. Like it just didn't match what a real owl." And he's looking at a real owl and he says, "That was not a real owl that I saw that night." So he went through hypnotic regression. He said nothing emerged in that session except that the owl was wearing boots. So now, I've read the transcripts, I've talked to hypnotherapists who've done this kind of research, and I asked them, "Hey, do you have owls show up in your research?" And they look at me like, "Oh my God, owls show up all the time." And then they say, the hypnotherapist will say, "This is what happens. Someone's, driving down the road, or there's a 4-foot tall owl in their yard, or whatever." And in the hypnotherapy session, the hypnotherapist will say, "Well, describe the owl for me." And the person will say, "Well, it's bald and it's skinny and it's got a tight-fitting little uniform on and it's got big black eyes and I don't think this is an owl." So they're describing what we would call the prototypical gray alien. But what they're seeing in their mind is an owl. And that is very, very common. Driving at night, owls peeking in the window, people saying like, "Oh, I woke up and there was a 4-foot tall owl standing at the side of my bed." That's pretty common. Like, so you get these things that are at play in these accounts. Now, this is a story from a woman. Her pen name is Lucretia Hart. She had UFO, was very aware she was having UFO contact experiences from a teenager. She knew these things were happening in her life, but they always happened at night. She was working for a girls' school, like a Girl Scouts, taking girls camping, and they were out in the mountains. This was in the Northwest of the United States, and she was between two campsites. There was a little path between the two campsites. So there's one campsite of girls, and it was that she walked to another campsite of girls. She had to walk down this path. And so she could hear the girls like in the background. Well, she wasn't far away. Like, she heard their voices and they're talking. So she's walking down this path and she turns a corner and there's a gray alien standing on the side of the path. And this, you know, total 4 foot tall being with a big bald head and the skinny, skinny body. And she said, like, wow, I'd never, like, to see that in the full daylight was absolutely jarring, like soul shattering. And she said the eeriness of the bright sunshine reflecting off the gray white head was just like freaked her out. So this thing looks at her and there's this moment where it was like, oh, she's not supposed to see me. She had this kind of, so these beings are telepathic, right? So like all, like I feel like I'm jumping right to like graduate level UFO studies here. So like everyone who reports, no, I like talk to people all the time. It's like, you ever seen their mouth move? And like, nobody says they saw their mouth move. Like people communicate with these beings. It's all done through direct telepathy. Like 99% of it. I've heard a few little stories where people said that it felt like they spoke to them in what would be audible sound. It seems to be all direct communication to the mind to mind. So this thing looks at her, she looks at it, it kind of panics, but at the same time, they're telepathic. So she's like absorbing this alien panic, and she just basically hears it go, owl, 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 and she watches it morph into a 4 foot tall owl, and it turns around and walks into the woods. So there's an event where it kind of, like the alien got caught or busted or messed up, so she watched it. And I have a couple other accounts of people who watched, you know, what would be a gray alien just turn into one where it turned into a cat, another where it turned into three or four aliens, I'm drawing a blank now, turned into a deer turned into four deer before a witness's eyes. So there's this aspect within the phenomena of the alien entity, the alien intelligence has some way, whether it's through technology or whether it's through psychic means, to put an impression into the mind of the observer. And that impression would be most often either a deer or an owl. And I've talked to a lot of people. I feel like I'm correct in this. Most often the screen memory is either a deer or an owl. And then after that, there's a whole long list of things that are less commonly reported. Raccoons, squirrels, firemen, clowns. Jesus actually gets reported. It's not uncommon for people to see Jesus, right? So I woke up in this, you know, there was Jesus in the backyard, or Jesus was standing next to my bed in the middle of the night. And it plays out like UFO contact the same way if it had been like a 4 foot tall squirrel or something like that. So these are woven into the UFO lore. And now I would also say that the owl is a highly charged totem. It's an archetype. It's a highly charged part of our mythology, part of our folklore, as also as deer. Deer has a rich mythological lineage the same way that the owl do. So I wonder the reason that they're using the owls. Now, I've asked UFO researchers, I asked Bud Hopkins, who's since passed on, who was a pioneering research in UFO abduction experiences. And I asked him, you know, why are they using owls as screen memories? And he kind of said, well, you know, the aliens kind of look like an owl, right? They got the big black eyes, you see them at night. So you can kind of input, it makes sense that they would use an owl. And that has been repeated so many times in the UFO culture that it's become a sort of truth. But I have to question that. I'm much more intrigued by the fact that the owl is a rich symbolic animal, as is the deer, as is a clown, as is Jesus. You know, so these, why are they using these archetypal spiritual elements, mythological elements, symbolic presentations in the context of UFO experience. That to me is a more interesting question than they just, man, well, an owl sort of looks like an alien. I may be totally off base and just speculating, but that's where I'm at. Yeah.
Okay, so next we're going to hear from Tina Bird. Tina has had many ET encounters throughout her life, and her first experience occurred when she was just 6 years old. There was a time, wasn't there, when you were allowed to walk, that they switched off this thing that paralyzes you.
Yeah.
And you saw there were these weird pods there, and there was a little grey that tried to block you.
This was one of those days when I was taking you 2 or 3 days in a row, which was very rare. It was very rare. It did happen. And this particular occasion, I went to bed. Normally, you feel very alert. You wake up and you feel very alert. This time didn't happen to me. When I went to bed as normal, didn't have any of that. Next thing I know, I'm wide awake, and there's a bright white light above me, and it hurts your eyes because you can't turn your head or refocus your eyes or blink. And then this thing, and I was laid there flat, and I don't like being laid flat. I absolutely hate it. And next thing I know, the one that knows me, Luke, came over, and he was to my left, and he kind of looked at me as if to say, you know, I'm here, it's okay, what's wrong, kind of thing. And whatever they wanted to do, he said, this is the first time I ever had to give consent. They never asked me to give consent before, never. And so I'm not sure if they see it as a type of agreement. It's not a verbal agreement. So it went along the lines of, if you agree to behave, I will sit you up. So it was like, if you give something, I'll give something. It's a trust basis. That's the message. So I had to agree. They know I don't like being laid down. I absolutely hate it. So he sat me up at a 30 degree angle. And I was there. The light was off me a bit, and I could just like I could see down my bed. I could see my surroundings a little bit more. Didn't feel so groggy. I could clearly see now. And I was sat up, and it seemed to be a huge, huge room. There's about, I want to say, I could see to my right, probably a big group of them, at least 8 to 11 initially, the little ones. There was something else going off just further to my right, nearer my shoulder, which I couldn't see, because at this time I could just see forwards. And I could see, I was naked, but I had this kind of rag on. I'm not quite sure. It was like a rag. I just covered just above the top of my breast and just above my knees. It was like a rag. It just like kind of placed over me. I couldn't tell you what the material was. It was just like a rag. And then he was letting me take in what was going on. I could feel his presence behind me. He was like behind me. They stand behind you so they can like kind of control you. And I didn't freak out. I must have been used to them being close to me, because when they're close to me, I can listen to their conversation. I can happily join the link and I can hear 8 of them talking. But any more than like up to 8, it goes so fast, it's incomprehensible. It's so fast, it's like a silver cord being yanked through your head. It's incomprehensible, you know. So I think he waited to me, you know, and he said, would you like to get up? If you want to get up, you have to agree to behave. I'm like, yes, I'd agree to behave. And then it all went like bright white for a couple of seconds. I'm not quite sure what happened. Next thing I know, I'm stood up next to this like bench, and someone said, well, how big is this bench off the floor? Before, I could never answer the question, you just silly things like that. And it wasn't until I realized these things were about the smaller ones are about 3 foot tall, and the smaller one and the larger ones are about four feet tall, about 4.5 feet, if that. And so this bench must have been about 3 foot, 2 foot off the floor. So it's quite low down. You don't realise, you know, how low these things were, because you're laid on them. You don't get to see the floor. So it's the first time I was ever kind of stood up. And I had this bitterness taste. Now, because I'm allergic to anaesthetic, anytime, even with like wash they inject into me, or if they give me morphine at the hospital or relaxing, it tastes like a bitter liquid on my chest, and I can taste it in my chest. And I could taste this bitterness. So I knew they'd give me something to sedate me, because I recognised the bitterness. And then I felt a bit groggy, and I felt them like an urge to move forward. but it was like a drunkenness, but I was like slowly dragging my feet, but I could walk. And I wasn't looking forward anymore, I was looking down. So I definitely felt controlled. It was like walking on a grey brittle concrete, but the floor wasn't grey. It was weird. It was like a brittle concrete. That's what it felt like. And I never felt anything before. So you've gone from laying down, being numb and not being able to even blink your eyes and just being on record, to tasting bitterness in your chest and not having free movement, but looking down and feeling things that you didn't know. I didn't know if I was hot or if I was cold or anything, what was going on. All I know that I could see the floor. And then I kind of stopped and I could look up. And I felt a bit more freer, but I felt it very intense now. It was a different link, so I knew straight away we were on a different ship. It was a different scent. And I had a one-way communication with the one that knows me, because I stopped seeing out my eyes again, so I stopped seeing forward. And I could feel the others pushing against the link, so all the others were there. Whether I was blocking them, he was blocking them, or it was just easier for him to communicate with me, like one-on-one experiment, whatever it was definitely an experiment. And I knew I was on a short leash and it was going to be over in more ways than one if I did not cooperate. I knew that was the message I had. And then he said, yeah. And then it was, I think there were like, it was reassurance was given, I think, not to me, to the others, by the one that knows me. I think he was in charge of all this, but he was being watched closely. That's what the understanding I had. And, so I started seeing out my eyes again. And when I opened my eyes, there was a lot more. There's probably about 16 of these little white ones, but they were further back to the right, some distance from me. And so it was definitely, they were all observing me very closely. And I seemed to take a couple of steps forward. And as I did, the brightness dimmed down and I could see it was like black. And all of a sudden, got a bit lighter. And I could see, do you remember, I'm not sure how old you are, but do you remember in the 1970s, early 80s, they used to have these like clear smoked glass ceramic cups. And when you put liquid in them, like coffee or tea or something, they went black.
Yeah, it was like that.
So these pods looked like that. For a second, I thought they were metal. And then they looked like glass, black pods. They looked exactly like that glass in the 70s. And then it was like I was urged to move forward. And as I went to move forward, all of a sudden something caught my eye. Now, I couldn't turn around quickly. I could only do very, 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 very small controlled movements. And this thing, one of them was a white one, like the one of the little ones, but a bit smaller. But it looked like a little one. And the second I saw him, he did not want to link with me. And normally you don't get a calmness off them. You don't contact him when they look at you. You normally link straight with them. This thing did not want to look at me, and I got a sense it was like angry or it didn't want me there. It wasn't hostile. It just didn't. It perceived me as a threat. It perceived me as a direct threat, and this thing was so bleeding quick. It just ran like a zigzag through the pods and it stood right in front of me to confront me. It was a few feet away. It did not want to be near me. It was clearly protecting the pods. And everything kind of stopped for a second. And it was communicating. I stopped hearing the one that knows me. So I could see out my eyes again. I could see out my, and they were obviously having a conflap. And it wasn't taking its eyes off me, but it was definitely communicating with the one that knows me and with the others there. And when he started ordering, I could like hear the link. I wasn't completely, I could still see out my eyes slightly, like the grey mist, like I was earwigging, I could hear them. And he was ordering him to step back. It was like he was obviously in control of looking after these pods, but the one that knows me was in control of this experiment, and they just wanted to get on with it. He was ordered to stand back, which he did not like, but he did. So he moved back out of my vision. I could not see him in my sight anywhere. I'm not sure where he went, but he went. And then I was urged to move forward nearer these pods. So as I did so, I got a tiny little bit more freedom, only slightly tiny. I was very much still controlled, but I had the ability to like move my body. So like I took a step closer. But as I went to look at the pods, now as I went to bend down, I could bend down, but I couldn't like stand up or move. So I had the ability to bend my back. So as I bent down to look at this pod, I see a red light. And everything kind of froze, and I stopped seeing out my eyes, and he was having a little confab again, and I could hear him in the link talking to the others. And it was no letter, the gist of what I saw, I was hearing a one-sided conversation, like a but with elastic band being pushed against your head, because you can hear the others like agreeing or disagreeing or having their say. And it was like he was trying to explain to him, no, she's inquisitive, no, she's not going to hurt him, like she was calm kind of thing. She just wants to have a look, it's inquisitive of him, and he got the go ahead to let me touch this pod. So they were monitoring everything. They were monitoring my hormones, my pheromones. They read your emotion. So you're angry, or you're going to turn angry, or you're upset, or you get upset. They read that before you even it starts in your body. So they read that as a direct threat or a signal or a spoken word. So they read your emotions before you do, and they're alert for it. They look out for it. I'll start seeing out my eyes again. And then as I went to lean over slightly a bit more to touch the pod, I see a baby in there. And just as I was skimming the outside, I hadn't quite touched the pod. I froze again and I started seeing at my eyes for a second. And he was talking to me very, very quickly before I was even asking the questions. He was reassuring me because I saw a baby. There was a baby, like a human baby in this. Like it was like a artificial like glass womb, and it was curled up in there, and this thing was cold. Now he knew I was trying to freak out. He's going, no, look. He said, see that light? He said, the baby is not cold. That's what he kept reiterating. The baby's fine. It's warm inside there. He said, see that red light? He said, that red light is keeping the baby warm. The baby's not cold. He said, it's just the outside. It's just the outside's cold. So I then, because the second you really, you start getting stressed, they don't like that. So they're there, either reassuring you or they're yanking you back to the bed. It's one or the other. So they had a little confab again. It was agreed that I could continue and touch the pod. Now, he told me then, he said, the baby's fine in there. That's when he told me or showed me an image in my head. They cannot make embryonic fluid to the same standard as a human being. It's artificial embryonic fluid.
Next, we have Paul Benton. Paul has had extraterrestrial and other types of unusual experiences throughout his life. So, Paul, I wanted to ask you about something that happened in your dental practice. Did you have a really bad headache and you sent everyone home?
Yes, I was just in about the third year of my dental practice, so beginning dental practice. And I was in this old office on the second floor of a building in Hood River, my hometown.
What year was that?
That would have been 1979, 1980, in that time frame. So I had a bad headache. Well, I don't get headaches. So I sent my staff home, locked up the office, and laid down in my dental chair to see if I could get this headache to go away before I tried to drive home. Because I don't get headaches, Simon, but this was a very, very, very bad headache. I mean, I rarely get headaches, I should say. So I lay down in my dental chair, and then it kind of nodded off. The next thing I know, so all the lights are off, the doors are locked. Next thing I notice, there's two beings in my operatory with me, and they're standing behind my dental chair. And this was very startling. So I'm asking them, saying, what are you doing here? And they said, and this is what put me at ease, they said, we notice you have a headache. So obviously, they were aware of my physical conditions, physical situation. And I said, yeah, I have an incredibly bad headache. And so they proceeded. Now, they were standing behind my dental chair, Simon, so I didn't get a good look at them. I knew there was two of them, one on either side behind me, but I didn't get a look at them at all, because the only light in the operatory was from the street lights, and that was quite dim. So no good visual on that. But I did notice that they pulled out this device, this something or other, that was about 18 inches long, somewhere in there, and maybe an inch or inch and a half in diameter. And from behind me, they wave that over my head three times back and forth, and they say, or they indicate to me, and I don't know if this is verbal. It sounded to me it was in English, and it was I was hearing it, but this could have been telepathic, Simon. I don't know. That's something I can't determine. But they raise this over my head three times, and they say, well, the reason you have a headache is because you have a brain tumor. And that was shocking. It's like all I needed now. I was just barely starting to break even with my dental practice, paying for all of my equipment and all that stuff. And so I have a brain tumor. That was not a good thing. And they indicated to me, well, this is not to worry. So they did something to this device, some little switches or dials or whatever gadget on this gadget. And they wave it over my head from behind me about three times, and the pain goes away instantly, completely gone. And I'm going, what is that? And so they indicate that this is a device that they have. And I said, so first off, here I'm in the medical field. I'm going, this would be wonderful if you have something that gets rid of brain tumors in seconds. That would be amazing. So I said, where can I get one of those? I was really excited at this point. And they said, oh, well, we'll send you one. And I said, so I'm thinking, you know, this is great. What can I do with this? It's going to be amazing. What this will do to the medical community to be able to identify and cure tumors or brain tumors or whatever in a matter of minutes. So I was really excited about it. I said, well, where do you live? Well, they point straight up. Well, where we were, I was on the top floor of this building. There was nothing above us except the sky and, of course, the stars and everything there. So I'm absolutely amazed. Well, the pain was gone. So I went back to sleep. And when I woke up again, it was still night. The doors were still locked. Everything was locked up and they were gone. And so it was one of those things that's like, okay, I was there alone. I have no witnesses other than myself. But I tell you, the pain was incredible before they showed up. And after they left, it was completely gone. And to this day, I have been waiting for the, you know, check the UPS and the Postal Service, you know, for this package to arrive. Well, it hasn't arrived. It hasn't come in that form. But I do believe, Simon, that technology is on the planet now. I do believe that it's been on the planet probably since that time, which would be 79 or 80, that has been on the planet and is being used, but it just hasn't been released to the general public, which is what I'm a part of. But it did change my life trajectory and my career choices. I left dentistry. I went to study computers because I thought whatever this was had to do with frequency or something. And so it had to do with detecting and then changing frequencies within the human body. Fascinating. So I quit my practice, went to San Francisco to study computers. And that took me on a complete different path, of which I ended up doing medical applications of computers. So yes, it was an amazing event.
The next person we're going to hear from is called Steve Belcher. Recently, after 33 years of silence, Steve finally decided to go public. He now reveals his amazing story of multiple encounters with what he believes to be extraterrestrial beings, commonly referred to as the Greys. When you were with your dad and you were 4 years old, and could you tell us what happened there?
I'm not sure where it was. I think it was probably in a place called Owen Sound. And we were coming back from somewhere at night. And it was just me and my dad. And back in those days, the cars used to have a kind of a shelf behind the back seat. And it was wide enough that, being a small child, I could climb up there and lay down on that shelf and look up through the back window at the stars. And so I was doing that night. My dad was driving us home. And I noticed a star up in the sky that seemed to be moving. And so I focused on that. And I felt like I was getting mental impressions, like images and stuff from it. And it was getting closer. And I was very curious about it because at that time I didn't know anything about ETs or UFOs. And so I climbed over the front seat and I was sitting next to my dad. And I asked him, what's that light out there? And by this time it was following us at treetop level, tracking our speed. And my dad said, what light? And I said, that light. And I pointed out the window at it, and he briefly turned his head. And when he saw it, he immediately went into like an instant panic mode. And I said, what is it? And he said, shut up, leave me alone. And I could see he was visibly shaken because he normally wouldn't talk to me like that. And he stepped on the gas pedal and he was trying to outrun it. But it was following exactly with our speed for a ways down the road. And then finally it shot ahead of us a fair distance, and it started coming down in the road. And so we had to slow down. And when we slowed down, it was right in front of us, and it was like very bright. It lit up the whole road, lit up the trees and everything. And my dad seemed to be trying to regain his composure. And then he turned to me and he said, I'm going to see what they want. And I want you to stay here in the car and stay down. Don't get out of the car for any reason. Wait for me and I'll be back. And he seemed to calm down a lot. And the ship was sitting on legs in the middle of the road in front of us. And I noticed that two beings had got out of the ship, and they were like gray beings with the large heads and the big, large black eyes. And so my dad opened the door and he started walking over toward them. And he stopped in front of this one being that I assumed was the leader, and he was conversing with him in the road. And I was, I peeked over the dashboard and I could see him talking to this being. And the other being was to his right, standing there just waiting. And so I started to get really suspicious, and I wondered, who are these people? Have I seen them before? And do I know them? So, you know, you can get away with a lot when you're a little kid about 4 years old. And so I got out through the driver's side and I started walking toward them behind my dad. I was kind of creeping up to them. And my dad must have heard me, because he put his hand behind his back and he started making these motions to get back, stay back, you know. And I walked up right behind him, and the being that he was talking to suddenly looked over his shoulder and saw me, and he said to my dad, you seem to be concerned about the child. And I could hear him in my head, like very clearly in my head. And it wasn't audible speech, it was telepathy. And so my dad kind of laughed and he said, yeah, that's my son. And he turned around to me and he said, I told you to stay in the car. Now you go back and get in the car and wait there for me. I'll be along shortly. And I said, but I want to see. And so the being talking to my dad said, would you like my mate or my crew member here to take him back to the vehicle for you? And my dad said, no, that's okay. He said, I have to get going anyway. My wife's waiting for me at home. And the being talking to my dad immediately looked at the other being. And the other being came over to me, took me by the hand, and started walking me back to the car. And my dad was just standing there with his mouth hanging open, like he couldn't believe this was happening, and he didn't seem very comfortable with this idea at all. But the being took me back to the car, and I got in through the driver's side, and the being got in next to me, and he closed the door. And he sat there with me in the car. And I looked back at my dad, and he seemed to have disappeared. So I assume him and the other being went on the ship. So this gray alien that was sitting there next to me, I had absolutely no fear of him. I felt like he was familiar to me somehow. And he pretty much babysat me while my dad was being abducted. So he started asking me questions. Like, he put his hands on the steering wheel and he said, "What does this do?" And I said, "Well, it makes the car go this way or that way, depending on which way you turn it." And he said, "Oh, I see." And then he looked down at the floor, at the pedals on the floor, and he said, "What do these do?" And I said, "Well, the one makes the car speed up and the other one makes it slow down or stop." And he said, "Oh, I see." He said, "How do you start it?" And I said, "Well, you put a key in there and you turn it and that starts it." And he said, "Can we do that?" And I said, "No." I said, "My dad has the keys." He said, "Oh, okay." And then he asked me about the radio. He pointed to the radio on the dashboard and he said, "What does this do?" And I said, "Well, that's a radio." I said, "We can hear music on it. We can hear people talking." And he said, "Can you talk back to them?" And I said, "No, it doesn't work that way. You can only listen." And he said, "Oh, I see." And so he kept me busy with questions. And he asked me what I did during the day. He said, "Do you go to school?" And I said, "No, that's next year." I would have started school at 5, so that's how I know I was 4 at that time. And he said, he kept me amused and for quite a while, and asking me kind of what would seem like mundane questions to an adult, but he communicated with me on my level. And eventually I looked up and I saw my dad and the other being had come out of the ship and he was standing there talking to him in the road. And the being sitting next to me said, "I have to go now." And I said, "Can you stay a little bit longer?" Because I was enjoying his company and he was taking an interest in me. And he said, "Well, maybe for a minute." And then I noticed the being talking to my dad looked over at us and he nodded. And the being sitting next to me said, I do have to go now." And he got out and started walking back toward the ship and passed my dad in the road coming back to the car. And my dad got in and he seemed kind of quiet and deep in thought. And so we watched the two beings get into the onto the ship, and it lifted off the road and it took off slowly over the trees. And my dad started the car and we started heading toward home again. And then something unusual happened, and that they came back a second time and they did the same thing. They followed us until my dad slowed down. And they came down in the road in front of us again. And my dad, I heard him mutter, "What the hell do they want now?" And so one of the beings, the leader, got out and he came over to the car and he motioned my dad to lower the window. And back in those days, we didn't have electric windows. The windows were controlled by a crank. You crank them down. So my dad cranked the window down a bit and he said, "What is it?" And the being held out his hand and he said, "You forgot these." And he handed my dad his glasses, his spectacles. And so my dad thanked him and he put his glasses on, and then the being walked back to the ship and they left again, and we resumed our journey home.
So continuing with these amazing stories, we're going to go with Sev Tok. Sev's ET contact started at age 10, but she kept it hidden until she moved to the Inner Banks of North Carolina. She came out in 2018 as a speaker at AlienCon, and through her book, You Have the Right to Talk to Aliens, which is endorsed by renowned UFO researcher Kathleen Marden. She's currently working on her next book. Yeah, it's this idea that ETs can work outside of normal time. Maybe that's how they travel between the stars as well.
Yes. So the reason I've come to this conclusion is because of what happened to me in 2017 when I moved here to the Inner Banks of North Carolina. I moved here from Capitol Hill, Washington, D.C. And on the second night here, and now at this point, I had already been in contact with the Greys and I was scared to death of them. And so I moved here and the son of a guns followed me here. And so on my second night, I had contact with them and they burned a red X into the left cheek of my tush. And I woke up in the morning and I was unpacking dishes in the kitchen. And it felt like something bit my butt and it hurt like a little bug. So I yelled over to my ex, I think something bit my butt. Will you look at it? And he goes, yeah. So I walk over to the living room and I bend over and he's not saying anything. And I'm like, oh my God, I could sense something was wrong. And so I'm like, well, does something bite my butt? And he goes, yeah. And there's also a red X. And in that instant, I knew it was the Greys and I thought they were messing with me. And he showed me the picture and it was pretty stunning. I have the picture in my book, on my website, it's easy to find. And it is an X that's 1.5 to 2 inches wide. And it's made up of 9 small red circles that look like they were burned into my skin. And I've had people measure the distance between the little red circles and they're all equidistant. And when I ran my finger across it, I couldn't feel it. And I was scared and I was very worried. And I just said to him, and he was stunned. And I just said to him, we're going to forget about this. We're going to forget we ever saw this. We're going to forget this ever happened. Because that's what I had been doing for decades, just tossing everything in the back. Because I had so many things that I was just like, I was just telling myself, okay, just pretend like that didn't happen. Okay, pretend like you didn't see that. The scars on the body, the marks. I had a scoop of skin, a chunk of skin missing from my wrist. And when I looked down to see it, there was no blood, there was no scab, nothing, clear, chunk of skin gone. And I just told myself, oh, isn't that funny? Okay, I'm going to ignore that. And then I see marks on my body, geometric marks that are perfect. And I would think, oh, look at that bug bit me in the shape of a perfect triangle. There'd be lights on in the hallway. I'd feel entities stepping on my bed, touching me. I just kept ignoring all of it. So when an X appears on my tush, once again, I'm like, we're going to ignore it. And this is not healthy. I do not recommend this for anybody. I finally had to face it. But then 9 days later, I came to in my bedroom, and I always come to the same way. It's an instant wake up. There's no grogginess. It's just ding and your eyes just pop open and you're completely alert. And then I had this download, this gush of a memory that I was on this bed that resembled a hospital bed. And I was lying on my side and I couldn't move my arms and I couldn't move my legs and I felt paralyzed. And it was a dimly lit room. I saw one piece of furniture and I sensed that there was something behind me and I could move my head. So I turned my head around and I came face to face. I locked eyes with a gray who was doing something to my back. He was just a couple of inches from me. And I describe in the book, looking into his eyes was like looking into pools of oil. And I was scared to death. And so I turned around and ding, I'm wide awake in my bedroom. And I'm thinking, oh my God, oh my God, if I have another X on me, like, I'm not going to be able to handle it. This will take me over the edge. So I got out of bed and he was still sleeping and he always woke up before I did, but not this time. And I went downstairs and I waited for him and I was scared because I was scared that I'm not going to be able to handle it if there's another ex. And there was also something I knew that I had never known in any other ET contact that I've had. And I knew that that bed that I was on in that room was on the moon. And so he comes downstairs and I tell him my memory and then I ask him to look at my butt and there's silence and I'm silently freaking out. And he said, there's another X and it looks just like the first one. And it's directly across the first one, this time on the right cheek. So I had two red X's burned into my hiney. And he showed me the picture and it's really hard to describe what an existential crisis feels like because in that moment, I just didn't know what was real anymore. I didn't know who I was anymore. I didn't know what I was doing in the middle of the night meeting aliens. I didn't know who we were as a race. I didn't know what was going on in the whole galaxy. It was just complete confusion. And I started crying and he asked me, is there anything I could do for you? And I couldn't think of anything. And so I just calmed myself down. And I was also really angry at the Greys. I knew it was the Greys. And I just told myself, I need help. And that was the first time in my life that I realized I should seek help. But I didn't know how I was going to get that help. And I just figured that would organically happen. I just like to let things organically happen if I need something to happen. And that's what I did. Eventually, a few months later, one of my best friends who lives on the island of Maui in Hawaii told me I should watch the movie Unacknowledged by Dr. Stephen Greer. So I did, and that lit something inside of me. And after I watched it, I went to my computer and I told myself, okay, I have to find somebody. I have to find somebody to send a picture of this ex to, but I have no idea who to send it to. So I heard in my head, MUFON. I didn't know what MUFON was. So I Googled it to find out it's the largest UFO research organization in the world. And on the website, I saw a picture of Kathleen Marden. And I told myself, she's the one. She's going to help me. So I emailed her and she responded right away. And we Zoomed or we Skyped for an hour and a half. She was very generous. And it was one of the most important conversations in my life. And she validated all of my experiences. And I asked her, what am I supposed to do with all the information the Greys have given me? Because they've given me information about the hybridization program and our future fate. And she said, I can't answer that, Sev. That's you have to figure out that. Because at that time, I saw myself standing on stage talking about this. But I was still in hiding. I had not come out. So to me, that was a crazy vision.
So next, we're going to hear from Matthew Roberts. In 2015, Matthew was a U.S. Naval Service member stationed on board the USS Theodore Roosevelt. The events that transpired during their 2015 workup cycle brought us the first ever declassified footage of unidentified aerial phenomena and the New York Times article titled Glowing Auras and Black Money, the Pentagon's Mysterious UFO Program. Subsequently, he transferred to the Office of Naval Intelligence in Washington, where he began to have frequent and often intense personal experiences with the UFO phenomenon. You felt a hand on your right arm below the shoulder, and there was some kind of blue, was it a blue woman?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. after that. And it, of course, I was not in any way prepared for this. It was very disturbing to me at the time on many different levels. But so I was asleep one night and I felt something grab my arm, my right arm, just below my shoulder. And I woke up. So I opened my eyes and I'm looking at the trim around the window off to my left. And all of a sudden the trim starts to go blurry. And so I went to try and raise my eyes to my hands to my eyes to kind of wipe the sleep out of my eyes. My arms just kind of flopped there. And I realized I can't move. And so I looked down and I saw that I no longer had the comforter on me that I always sleep with. And then I was like, wait a minute. I woke up because somebody grabbed my arm and I can still feel that hand on my arm. So being unable to move, I kind of had to fight to turn my head to the right to see what was going on over there. And as I do this, my room is becoming blurrier and more out of focus. And then I'm looking to my right. And then I see that there's this, I guess I could only describe it as a shadow figure, like this dark torso, two arms and a head kind of standing next to the bed and kind of bent over looking into my face. And as I'm looking at this, I think to myself, well, I should be terrified right now because there's somebody in my room. They're touching me and I can't move. And it's the middle of the night. Why would that ever happen? You know? But I was like, but I'm not terrified for whatever reason. I'm not afraid. And as I'm looking at this, all of a sudden, my room behind this shadow person starts to light up in like this golden light. And the light becomes very intense and blinding. And then the light concentrates into these rays of golden light coming out of its head. And then I see like this image appear over the face of this entity that's standing over me. It's almost like there was a tablet that was hanging in front of its face. And all of a sudden this image appears on it. And it starts flipping through images. And these are all images of people that I know. And then it stops on an image of an ex of mine from 20 years ago. And I'm like, what is going on? You know, because this just seems so bizarre to be happening in the middle of the night. So I start to lose consciousness again and I go back to sleep. And I'm having this dream where it's just my ex and I, and we're surrounded by nothing, right? There's no floor, there's no bed, there's no nothing. And I start to have this sexual dream. But then I start to wake up and I'm back in my room now. And I can see that there is this female on top of me and she's having sex with me, obviously. And my hands are on her thighs and I can feel that her skin is not like normal human skin. It's much thicker than human skin. So I knew immediately, I was like, this woman is not, she's not human. And at the time I remembered thinking there's got to be some kind of craft parked in the backyard or something that she had just came out of. And her skin is blue. It's like this light kind of powder blue skin. And I start to scan upwards towards her face. I can see that she's wearing this tube top looking thing. And it's kind of shiny and glistening and metallic looking. It almost looked like it was made of like silver and tiny rubies or something, because it had these silver and ruby zigzag pattern to it. And so I start to look up towards her face, and her face is just totally blurred out. I could see that there was a face there, but I couldn't make it out. It was just, all of it was a blur. And it was not clear at all. So then I fall back asleep, and I'm back in my room several times throughout this experience, and I can see this woman on top of me. And then, of course, like, I climaxed, obviously, in my dream. And then I wake up in my room the next morning. And I really hate that people, when they talk about these experiences, they're like, oh, it's just sleep paralysis, right? And you're just dreaming, or you're hallucinating. I did not hallucinate this. I know the difference between a dream and reality. You can always tell. So I knew I was in my room. And never in a dream have I been able to feel like someone's skin texture, for instance. Yeah, this was the first experience I had. And I went down to my truck the next morning, and I was like, what happened last night? What was that? And I just kind of lit a cigarette, and I was like dry heaving, because it was just so, all of it just seemed so disgusting to me at the time. And I thought, this is a nightmare, you know? Because this is going on, right? And people have always been talking about this. And I thought this was just the realm of tinfoil hats. And I didn't think there was anything to this, but now I know. I know there is. And I thought, you know, I started to think about that whole light show of my room lighting up and then the golden rays of light coming out of her head. And I thought, this looks like all the religious art I've ever seen from all over the world, right? Like some kind of divine entity that has these rays of light or a halo above its head. And it really was very reminiscent of that. And I thought, this has been going on a very long time. And people have been having this experience for a very long time. And then I started to think, I was just raped last night. This can't happen. This is stupid. And I started to think, why is this happening? You know, I felt violated. I felt sick. I felt just kind of disgusted about the fact that there's no one I could even talk to about this. Because they're going to think I'm crazy, but I'm not. So it was just the whole thing was just disturbing, right? The not being able to talk to anybody about it, the fact that it happened, and feeling like I'd just been raped. It was too much, you know. And so that's where I was at the end of that experience.
Okay, well, thanks for listening to this compilation episode. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to extended episodes. Just go to patreon.com/alienUFOpodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. There are two tiers. In the $3 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. And in the $6 a month tier, you get an extended episode every week. And in my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regression. And I'm offering a free consultation call, which can be booked on my website. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review. And be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. and thanks for listening.